Okay, so first of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to give a talk here. I know we are all probably looking forward to go for lunch, but I promise just one more talk and we'll go. So stay with me. Okay, so my talk is going to be based on these recent and ongoing works with some fantastic collaborators, including my PhD student, Ignacio Ruiz, who is really doing amazing work here. Okay, so let me start considering an effective field theory with recoupled to Einstein gravity. It's clear that the effective field theory is going to break down. The description breaks down at some energy scale above which quantum gravity matter. But it's less clear what is this scale and how it breaks down. Okay, so the first naive guess that you could have is that this is the Planck scale. But from string theory data, some Planck considerations that I will explain, sometimes this cutoff can be much lower than the Planck scale in certain regions of the space of EFT parameters. Okay, so what do I mean with this? Well, in string theory, all EFT parameters are given by vacuum expectation value of some scalar fields. So when I mean, okay, this works. No, okay. So when I mean certain regions, what I actually mean is at the boundaries of this field space. Because there, as Komrun was remarking, we always find some infinite hour of states that decay exponentially and force the cutoff to go to zero. So I will explain in more detail. This is known as the distance conjecture. This string theory feature is promoted to a Swan Planck constraint because we expect that it's a more general feature of quantum gravity. But the message is that from EFT perspective, this is interesting because whenever we go to these infinite distance limits, is for example, when we have some weak coupling limit for a gauge theory or some approximate global symmetry. So this is telling us that in these cases, the quantum gravity cutoff can be lower than the Planck scale with potential phenomenological implications. And that's why one of the things that we try to do in the Swan Planck program is to understand very well this tower of states so that we can give a precise behavior for this cutoff. Okay, so the plan for this talk is I'm going to, again, just quickly review what the distance conjecture is and this drop-off of the cutoff. And then I'm going to present here a new pattern, a new universal pattern that we found in all these string theory examples that allows to sharpen the conjecture and provide a quantitative bound for the mass of the tower. And after that, I will move beyond model spaces and explain what happens when we add scalar potential and how this can have implications for accelerated expansion or ideal-scale separation. In particular, I will present some new non-perturbative tests that we do of DKT, which is some scale-separated ADS vacuum proposal, with some surprising outcome that I will tell you at the end, so you stay with me. Okay, so let's start. So Komrun already reviewed this a bit, so let me be brief. The message is if you have an effective field theory coupled to gravity with a modulized space parameterized by the vacuum expectation value of the scalar fields, the distance conjecture implies that there is an infinite hour of states that decay exponentially at every infinite distance limit of this modulized space. Okay? So if we move to these boundaries at infinite distance, the tower behaves exponentially in terms of the geodesic distance measured by the field metric of the kinetic term of the scalars. For example, if we have extra dimensions and we decompactify and some volume becomes large, then we get a tower of Kaluza-Klein modes decaying exponentially. Or if the volume goes to zero, we get winding modes. Or if there is a string coupling that goes to zero, then you get towers of oscillator modes of string. Okay, so the point is that the tower implies a drastic breakdown of the EFT at some scale, which I will denote as the quantum gravity cutoff, okay? Which is defined as the scale above which there is no local field theory description weakly coupled to Einstein gravity anymore, because I get infinitely many fields. And in practice, I mean, just to give an example, for instance, if I have a KK tower, then the scale, this quantum gravity scale, is just the Planck scale of the higher dimensional theory, which can be lower than the lower dimensional in Planck. Or if I have a tower of higher spin, like string modes of some tensionless string, then this is the scale of the higher spin fields is the string scale. OK, so more generally, you can compute this quantum gravity scale as the species scale, which can be computed in terms of the number of single particle states weakly coupled to gravity that renormalize the graviton propagator and reduces the value of the quantum gravity cutoff. And using this formula, you can recover the previous result of the Planck scale and the string scale. Now, the important thing for us is that one can show that if the tower decays exponentially, then also this cutoff decays exponentially, could be a different rate depending on the density of states. But this is useful because provides an upper bound on the field range that can be accommodated. OK. So there has been many works in the past few years testing the conjecture, identifying what are the tower of states, and different compactifications, which had led to many interesting connections with mathematics, because sometimes understanding how the tower emerges is not trivial, and we are using this to learn a lot about the asymptotic geometry of the compactification. We've also explored what's happening in AES-CFT when you have an ADS background, because then you can translate this conjecture to some properties of the operators as you move in a conformal manifold. And indeed, all known infinite distance limits in the conformal manifold also contain towers of higher spin operators when we are in dimension bigger than 2 that decay exponentially with the Zalmogikov distance, which led to this CFT distance conjecture. So I'm not going to explain more this, but let me just advertise that my postdoc, Jose Calderon Infante, together with Florán, had a very nice recent work in which they actually proved part of this conjecture just using CFT techniques. So it might take some time, but I think it might be possible to prove the conjecture purely from CFT, the full conjecture. OK, so very well, the towers are very natural from string theory, but what are we expecting to learn from this? OK, so why are we testing this conjecture over and over? Point is that two things. First, we would like to understand how general it is in the sense of whether we can find also some bottom-up rational beyond string theory examples. So there are many promising avenues to try to do this, and there has also been recent work. In this talk, I'm going to focus on the second goal, which is to sharpen the conjecture. OK, so originally, it only says that the tower, you should have a tower of states decaying exponentially. It doesn't tell you what is the nature. It doesn't tell you what is the exponential rate, like how fast it goes to zero. So we need to provide at least some bound for this exponential rate if we want to use it for phenomenology. And then we are interested in understanding also what is the nature of the tower, so we understand what is the quantum gravity theory that emerges right above the cutoff. So what I'm going to do now is to show you some pattern that we've observed from string theory that helps to this purpose of sharpening the conjecture and provide a quantitative bound for the exponential rate. OK. So this is a new pattern in the sense that I don't think it had been noted before. And it's a relation between the leading tower of states and the behavior of this quantum gravity cutoff. So remember I told you that as you approach the infinite distance in the moduli space, the mass goes to zero. So the mass and the cutoff are functions of the moduli space. So you can take the gradient at a given point. Okay. So it's the variation with respect to the scalar fields. And what we find is that this gradient of the leading tower of states, because in general we can have more than one, times the gradient of the cutoff, in which the scalar product is taken with the field metric, is always equal to a constant. And this constant is always 1 over d minus 2, where d is the number of space-time dimensions. Okay? And this happens independently of the nature of the tower, the type of infinite distance limit, or the compactification manifold. Now, recall that I told you that this quantum gravity cutoff, you can also compute it in terms of what is this species scale. So if we phrase this constraint in terms of the number of species, which is a measure of the density of states of the tower, it has the precise power such that the pattern actually even becomes independent of the space-time dimension, okay, which is interesting. And it's telling you that the lightest the tower becomes, the less dense the spectrum can get. Okay, so it's interesting because whenever the pattern is satisfied, it's going to imply a sharp lower bound on the exponential rate of the leading tower. Okay, so this is an identity, okay, not just approximate. And since by definition of the cutoff, one can show that the mass of the tower is always smaller or equal, this pattern implies that the minimum value for the exponential rate is 1 over square root of d minus 2 if you want to keep the mass always smaller than the cutoff. Okay. So this reproduces some bound that was originally proposed in this paper. And I find it exciting because it goes in the direction of fixing all these order one factors and hopefully provide this sharp upper bound, okay, on the asymptotic geodesic field range that can be accommodated. Okay, so the fact that I'm telling you that this is satisfied for all examples that we check should surprise you, okay? Why? Why is it surprising? Well, first, I said that the distance conjecture implies that you have some tower of states that the mass decays exponentially, and also the cutoff decays exponentially. The structure of the tower, okay, like the density of the states, is going to fix the relation between the two. Okay, so like this gamma here. But what I'm telling you now is that what we find is that this gamma is actually related to the exponential rate itself of the tower in the field space, which a priori are not necessarily related. And this is something that it works both for Kaluza-Klein towers or string towers, even if they are very different. Okay, so if you consider an equispaced tower, like in Kaluza-Klein, then you can compute what would be like this species scale, this quantum gravity cutoff, and the pattern is only satisfied if the exponential rate of the mass of the tower is precisely that of a Kaluza-Klein compactification. And the same for the string tower. If you have now like the typical exponential Hagedorn behavior for a string tower, then this is satisfied for the exponential rate of the fundamental critical string. Okay? So in most cases, this is always satisfied with the same constant, 1 over d minus 2. Now, this is the first reason why I find it surprising. The second reason is that the cutoff, it's actually sensitive to all the towers of states becoming light, not only the leading one. And still, the pattern with respect to the leading tower is always satisfied. How is that possible? Well, the point is that when we have several towers becoming light, we also have like several directions in the moduli space, we have several scalars, and what happens is that these two vectors are not completely aligned, but the vector between them happen to be always such that they compensate the magnitude and this pattern is satisfied, okay? So let me just give you some examples just to convey the message. So the point is that in general, we can have several towers, like for instance, maybe you have some Kaluza-Klein decompactification, the leading tower is a Kaluza-Klein for one extra dimension, but still you can have other towers, like you can also have some string tower that appears below the Planck scale of the higher dimensional theory, okay? Which happens, for instance, if you have some Charcot compactification and I send both the radius to infinity and GS to zero, okay? Then I have both towers becoming light, okay? Now, even if the leading tower is the KK scale, the species scale, if you compute it, take into account all the towers, is the string scale. It's not gonna be the Planck scale. And again, the angle is such that the KK with the string also is give rise to 1 over d minus 2. Another example, if you have several Kaluza-Klein towers, you can have different KKs for different number of dimensions, okay? So that we can engineer some limits in which, again, the leading tower is a single KK, But we have other sub-leading KK towers such that in the end we are not decompactifying only one dimension, but maybe we are decompactifying six dimensions, like in this example. So then the pattern is satisfied with respect to the final scale, the final theory that we get at infinite distance, okay? So even if the leading tower in those cases is the same, just a KK tower, the quantum gravity cutoff can be different depending on the sub-leading towers. And these sub-leading towers matter to compute the quantum gravity cutoff, and the pattern is satisfied taking into account this final quantum gravity cutoff. Okay? Okay, very well. So in this paper with Alberto Castellano and Ignacio Ruiz, what we do is to check this in so that it works in different moduli spaces of supersymmetric compactifications with different levels of supersymmetry. We saw it in general for toroidal compactifications, but we also saw that it works for Calabi-Yau compactifications because there we also have very nice classifications of infinite distance singularities, and we can just check this in general in the vector moduli space. And also we check some examples of Fourier Equals 1. Okay. I encourage you to check the poster of Ignacio if you want to learn more about this, and also how it's related to continuity of the exponential rate. But let me just recall that, I mean, remark that at the moment, this is an observation. It's at the very least a way to summarize the structure of the towers that we find from string theory. And it's an open question whether it's a general feature. So it would be great if we can find some bottom-up argument to argue for this structure. The fact that it takes this very universal form relating the variation of the mass and the variation of the density of states is suggestive, and it would be great to find whether, I don't know, we can have some black hole or entropy argument, or maybe with S-matrix bootstrap, I don't know, that's for the future. Okay, so before moving on, let me say one more thing about this, the moduli spaces. This pattern can be useful not only to determine the structure in a given limit, but also to understand how we can combine different limits with each other, okay? Why? Because in the end, this pattern, you can use it also to determine what are the possible angles between the different towers of states, like the different light towers, okay? Which for instance, you can determine the angle between KK and string towers or different KKs, which you can also derive independently, assuming that that's all you have. And then once you have these angles, you can then try to check and classify how to combine them in a single global moduli space. So just a quick example, if you consider a moduli space with a flat metric, okay, just to keep it simple now, then you can have different asymptotic regimes characterized by different leading towers of states. But the sum of all of them, you have the flat metric, so it has to be 2 pi. So if I, for instance, if I have a two-dimensional moduli space in 9 dimensions, these are the possibilities for these angles. And then one can show that there is a unique solution to combine all these towers, which is the one that I present here. Okay, so this is a particular combination of the KKs and the string towers, which precisely tells you what is the theory that emerges at the different infinite distance limit and reproduces the string theory result, okay? Because these different regimes are precisely the different regions that we have for the nine-dimensional moduli space with 32 supercharges, like Ti2b, Ti2m theory. So now we can associate to these moduli spaces a particular polytop, which is like the convex hull of these towers, okay? So we can characterize the different dualities of the moduli space in terms of these convex hulls. In these polytops, in this case, it's just a triangle. And start what would be like some classification program, see how far we can get by classifying the possible dualities, by classifying the possible convex hulls of the towers. So I don't have much time left, so let me just refer to Muldrow's poster, if you are interested in this. And in the last 5 minutes, let me tell you a bit about what happens when we move beyond moduli spaces. So what happens if we add scalar potential to the story? Well, there are two typical scenarios I want to discuss that happen all the time in string theory. in which the limit is not obstructed by the potential, so that we can still go to infinite distance and explore the implications of the Tower of States. The first one is that we might have some positive runaway, for example, towards infinite distance. Okay, this happens very often. And another one is that we can have maybe a sequence of vacua, like discrete steps, a sequence of ideas vacua approaching the infinite distance limit. Now, in both cases, it seems that the potential, the vacuum energy, is still related to the mass of the Tower of States. And understanding precisely what is this relation, okay, so again, understanding how they become light in a quantitative way, actually give information about whether we can have asymptotic accelerated expansion or scale separation in ADS. And it's also important actually for the dark dimension scenario that Kombrun just discussed. Okay, so let me focus on these two scenarios. The case of a positive runaway, I find it interesting because actually if you have a positive runaway, you can also have accelerated expansion, okay, at a quintessence, if the slope is small enough a priori, okay? So small than this number. Now, there has been many recent works just from string theory perspective trying to quantify what are the slope of the scalar potentials that you get at infinite distance, like for instance when we add fluxes and so on. And even if we found ways to evade previous no-goes, there is no explicit example that has this small value of the slope to allow for accelerated expansion. Now, you could try to understand why it's so difficult to get this small value asymptotically in terms of the Tower of States. Because if the Tower of States contains higher spin fields, then naive application of the Higuchi bound would say that this gamma has to be bigger or equal than 2, which combined with the bound that I just showed you for the exponential rate of the tower, that I was also motivated before, implies indeed that the slope is bigger or equal precisely than 2 over square root of d minus 2, which is the condition for no asymptotic acceleration. Okay? Now, this doesn't imply that there is no acceleration deeper in the bulk, it's just about what is the cosmology at parametrically late times in the string theory. Now, the second scenario is when we have like a family of ADS vacua. And in that case, this relation gives us information about whether we can have scale separation between the ADS and the internal dimensions, right? If these towers are, for instance, like KK towers. Now, non-holographic SUSY examples have gamma equals 2, so there is no scale separation. But in this case, I don't think we have like a very good reason to argue for one value of gamma with respect to another. And actually, there are some proposals to have, from the bulk perspective, to engineer some scale-separated vacuum that have gamma bigger than 2. The point is that these proposals, they do not have an explicit ND uplift, so it's under debate whether they are consistent. So in the remaining few minutes, I just want to tell you some new results regarding some consistency check of this proposal. Okay, so just quickly, what is this proposal? It's just, I'm going to focus on this DGKT proposal. It's a 4D n equals 1 ADS vacuum that arises from compactifying massive type 2A, so with a Romance mass, on a Calabi-Yau 3-4 with osix planes and fluxes, such that we have some unconstrained flux that does not appear on the tadpole, which is the 4-4 flux. Now, by solving the four-dimensional equation of motion, one can find a family of ADS vacua that has scale separation in the sense that the size of ADS length can be parametrically larger than the KK scale in the large N limit. Now, the consistency of the solution is not clear because we only solve the four-dimensional equation of motion, which are like the zero modes of the 10D equation of motion of the Calabi-Yau. But there has been a lot of works and recent programs trying to understand the possible issues. And even if there is no conclusive answer so far, I think it's fair to say that everything seems fine so far from the bulk perspective. Now, what we are going to do here is to assume that everything is OK, and then study the fate of brains on this DGKT to perform a non-perturbative consistency check. Okay, so what do I mean with this? Well, I mean that we consider a default brain wrapping some holomorphic two-cycle that is dual to the large N-flux, okay? And we put these brains on the DGKT vacuum, okay? Now, in principle, this brain is BPS, meaning that the position of the brain is a modulus, okay? It's like the DC brains on the ADS5. You can just move it around, okay? And it's part of the moduli space of the CFT dual if there is one. Now, however, the difference with doesn't happen in ADS5 crosses 5 is that at low energies, the work volume theory of this brain is 3D n equals 1, so it has very little SUSY, so little that there are no protected quantities. Okay, so the superpotential of this work volume theory can receive corrections unless there is, for instance, some parity symmetry to protect it, as was remarked in these papers. So what we do here with Miguel Montero is to show that in DGKT, the fluxes break the parity symmetries, so there is nothing in principle to protect the superpotential. And in fact, by explicit computation, we show that as the superpotential is generated, because supersymmetry is broken spontaneously on the brain, meaning that the position of the D4 is no longer a modulus. Okay? And in fact, we find that it feels an attractive force towards the Poincaré horizon. Now, what does this mean? Well, the point is that this result is in tension with the weak gravity conjecture, because according to the weak gravity, which is another important Swan-Plank constraint, if the brain is not BPS, you would expect that it's repulsive, okay? Like the tension is smaller than the charge. And if that would be the case, then it would be clear that it implies an instability of the vacuum, because it would push the brain away, implying that the solution cannot be supersymmetric, so there is an inconsistency. Now, at the moment, the result that we find is that there is some clash between assuming that everything is fine on this DGKT vacuum and the weak gravity conjecture. And we are now exploring what are the implications of this, what it will mean for DGKT. So I encourage you to stay tuned. So let me conclude, and we all go for lunch. So I believe we are entering an era of precision in the Swan-Plank program. It's not just enough to say that you have tower of states becoming light. We really try to quantify what are all these exponential rates and other one factors. I give you a bound, a pattern that is satisfying all the examples that provides a quantitative bound and constrains the possible towers and how to combine the limits with each other and can have implications for accelerated expansion and ideal scale separation. And finally, just we are show you this, we are performing this check of DGKT, and the result is in tension with the weak gravity conjecture, so we have to see what will happen. So thank you for your attention.
Thanks.
Hi, I have a question. So in your talk, you sort of improved the lower bound of alpha, which is higher than the bound used in Curran's talk. So how much would this lower bound improvement like affect Curran's result? Because it seems like you know, the experimental test was like quite close to current technology.
It's not really bigger. I mean, it's the same bound. Okay, let me say. If I was assuming that everything we have, like all the possible nature of the towers, is KK towers or string towers, which is what is called this emergent string proposal, then you get also this bound for the exponential rate of the tower because it's precisely saturated by the strings, while it's bigger for the case of the KK towers. Now, what we are showing is like an independent, another way to derive the same type of bound. By showing this correlation with the cutoff, that then would automatically imply this. But it doesn't have like other implications for this. It's consistent with the bounds that Kumrun described before.
Yeah. So because of supersymmetry, we don't expect the brain to be pushed away, right? So the result you found is consistent with supersymmetry. If there is a superpotential, it should be.
Okay, why? So can you elaborate on this? Because what I would expect is that there are two options. Either the brain is BPS, so then it's a moduli space.
Yes.
Or there is a force. And then the question is, where the force, right? Like,
well,
if
you have a supersymmetric vacuum, it cannot decay.
Okay.
So if the brain was less than the tension, it would be a bubble. I mean, there would be a bubble nucleation.
Exactly.
Decay instability. So,
but that's the...
But,
don't finish.
So I think in a supersymmetric vacuum, we never would expect such a brain. And indeed, you don't find it. And I just wanted to point out that in ADS3, just the standard compactification with 4-4 supersymmetry and so on, ADS3 times S3 times A3 and so on. So those examples, if you are generic points in the moduli space, you also have no brain, which is exactly BPS. So all the brains have this feature that there is a force pushing them in.
Yeah.
So if you're going to say that the absence of a brain is a violation of some conjecture, then it's already violated in the ADS3 case. I don't know if you're bothered by this.
Okay, yeah, so the philosophy that we follow is that, I mean, of course, if this is a vacuum that is completely fine, we know the CFT dual and so on, then it's supersymmetric, and therefore the force should be attractive, as you said, because otherwise it's an instability, it's not consistent. What we are trying to do is to understand whether we can use this to determine whether this is a full, like, 10D solution of the equation of motion. Like, we are not assuming whether the GKT is fine or not. It's just that this is like, if it's fine, I mean, then it's consistent with that. Now, so that's why, at the moment, all we saw is that there is a clash. Like, we compute explicitly the superpotential, and we saw that there is a clash between the weak gravity conjecture that would imply that as long as it's not BPS, the correction should push you towards reducing the tension and then having the repulsive force, and the DGKT.
I'm not bothered by this clash because there is the same clash in the standard ADS3 CFT2 examples.
Okay, I need to think about those examples, but that's lower supersymmetry, so I'm not sure if things would work the same way, like lower dimensions.
Well, we should discuss this, but I think the conjecture is related to the fact that whenever there is a BPS direction, the weak gravity conjecture requires that there are supersymmetric BPS states. And not lack of that in those directions would be a violation of weak gravity, which we don't have any counterexample to. So we'll be glad to discuss. So your example would violate weak gravity. You know?
I mean, that's the part we are trying to understand. Yeah, that's the interesting thing.
Can I ask one question from online?
Yep,
an anonymous participant asked, does the number of particles at in each level of the tower have to stay the same, or can it grow in some way, like string modes?
The density of states?
The density of states.
It can be, yeah, you can have different, like in general, there can be different density of states. What we find is that even taking into account all the towers, in the end, is such that the variation of this density relates to the variation of the mass following this pattern. But it can be, doesn't have to be equispaced. Like, there can be different resolutions, like different solutions to that.